Welcome to the Rap Soul Podcast, where we dive deep into the world of music that moves our hearts and gets our feet tapping. This is the intersection of rap and soul music from the 80s, 90s, and 2000s. We appreciate you for listening. Share this podcast with a friend or family member who loves music as much as you do. The podcast is hosted by 12 Kyle. Next up, the Rap Soul Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for subscribing to the latest edition. I am your boy, 12 Kyle. Man, check this out. On this episode, we're going to talk music. We're going to talk a little, maybe a little history and, you know, talk really about the impact or lack thereof some music has had on us as a consciousness. And as you can see, if you're watching on YouTube, thank you for watching. I will not be doing this show alone. My co-host is not a co-host, great friend of the show. We go, man, I think we go back to like 2007, I think. Yeah, I think it's that we go back that far. She is a mother. She is a wife. She is an entrepreneur. She is a Wall Street warrior. My homegirl Krishna is back in the building. Krishna, what's up?
Hey, how's everybody? It's been a long time since I've been on the 12 Kyle podcast.
I know. It's like Rakim said, it's been a long time, but you back.
Right. I shouldn't have left y'all. But I have been all over, and I think I got tired of hearing my own voice for a bit. Like, mm-hmm. I was like, another podcast? Another episode? Like, no, I mean, And I love it, and at the same time, I just be like, yeah. So it's usually better for me to be like, hey guys, do you want me to be on? Because now I'm ready.
Totally understood. I tell people all the time, I love being a guest because all I got to do is show up. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I don't have to do anything. I don't have to prep anything. I love being a guest. But yeah, it's been a minute. It's been a couple of years, I think. But now here's the funny thing. Like, we talk every day, but we haven't had you on. And you've had your podcast. And you've had, what, one other podcast? Maybe two other podcasts.
I had two other podcasts. Okay. One might be coming back.
Okay.
So y'all shout out the Grits and Porridge ladies and tell them get back on their job. We all had to take a break. You know, the pandemic had us like, we was trying to keep it positive, but we was all just going through the spirals of what was happening to us. And I think that took its toll on us and the podcast, right? Because you just want to get on and just be happy.
Right.
But then you look at the news and you're like, oh my God, why they tried to kill us? We right. just want to go boom. Get toilet paper. Like, but we've been talking about how we come back and really being more intentional about what we do. Mm-hmm. I think we did good work because our podcast not only came with the obvious conversation of three black women from three different same generation but three different ethnical backgrounds and socioeconomic backgrounds and cultural backgrounds, but then we also had a syllabus so people could keep learning after. That was all my doing. Y'all know I love a good research tool.
As you should. And it's good. I mean, like you said, and I remember listening to you guys, and one of the things that I loved about the podcast was that everybody brought something different to the table. Mm-hmm. So it was like, you know how like you got one person, especially when you have a number of people, it's not like a situation where one person is the star and these are the co-hosts. Everybody right. brought something different to the table and really could stand on whatever they're talking about. And not necessarily agree. I mean, y'all mostly agreed. It wasn't like it was a bunch of fighting or anything like that.
No.
But, you know, you agreed on stuff and you brought different topics to the table. So I thought that was really cool. So, yeah, I hope you guys bring it back.
Yeah, I hope so, too. So, Melissa and Carrie, I know y'all going to be listening. So, you done heard it. Kyle said, bring it back. Run it back, guys. Run it back.
No pressure. No pressure at
the
all.
The pressure's on. We gotta got to do it after graduation.
Right. I got you on. We had talked briefly about, you know, rebel music, if you will, or music that, you know, really inspires particularly when it comes to hip hop, inspires action or call to action, and really kind of like thinking about music that may or may not reflect the time. And as I was thinking about, you know, what we were going to talk about in this episode, obviously when you start talking about music and you talk about the times, I think back to, you know, like the music that we experienced in our lifetime on the soul and R&B side of, you know, songs like What's Going On, Inner City Blues, that type of stuff, where it was, you know, really, really reflective of the times. And, you know, then you think about, you fast forward to 2025, or you can even go back to, like you said, COVID. I didn't really see a lot or hear a lot in rap that reflected what we were going through as a culture and as a people. So I guess I'll start there. Why do you think we didn't necessarily have a real strong push for the music to reflect the times, you know, even if we take it back to COVID times?
So I think that we have this gap in our hip hop history, because hip hop stopped being rap music and it became hip hop, right? It became a juggernaut machine maker, and when like a machine money maker. And once that happened, the gap, there was no fill for the gap, right? We get straight into the backpack era. And even a portion of that backpack era is not really backpackish, right? Mm-hmm. Kanye carried a backpack, but he really wasn't a backpack rapper.
Right.
And that's the time where it starts to shift and where it starts to change. And people realize what made money wasn't the positive, right? It was the street life, the ghetto. They wasn't even from the ghetto. The street life, the ghetto. I only got one parent. My mama don't love me. I had to sell crack when I was 10. That's what ended up being the moneymaker. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that we no longer actually had control of the genre anymore. And so fast forward to the pandemic and COVID, people were just more interested in what money they could make because they couldn't be on tour anymore.
Right.
And so you got a lot of the Panda and Drug Fueled and I Got 17 Baby Mamas type of music. So when something that is reflectively positive, like, I never say his name right, Toby.
Toby,
you know who I'm talking about.
I know, I can't pronounce his last name either.
We just going to say, y'all know who we're talking about. All Green Toby, right? Him and his wife.
Yeah, and his wife and his kids, yeah.
They make music that is essentially a positive message. Right. Some of it is hood, but there's a positive spin. Right. Like during the pandemic is when we got the song Make It Home. I hope you catch a wave that doesn't subside. Right. This was a positive song and it blew up because we were home. But it wasn't a song that would have blown up if we was in the club. Like we was outside. We was outside. We wasn't worried about making it home. But we were also watching the world implode and Black people being brutalized in a different way, right? Mm-hmm. We weren't outside to be able to do the things. We were all trapped indoors watching these things happen. So we have this gap, and I do think we have this gap that starts in that backpack era, right? Around the time when people stop loving Mos Def. Right, not me. I always love Mos Def.
Right.
Forever.
That's an interesting point, though.
And I feel like think about like if you start putting together the timeline, it's right around that.
So you're saying Kanye like early 2000s, early 2000s.
Yeah, like when did Kanye's first album come out? I won't even say his first album. Let's say his second album, because the first album he had us all mind tricked. Right, we were like, oh, College Dropout. Best album ever. But if you go back and listen to some of the lyrics, Kanye already told us who he was. We just wasn't paying attention.
Man, listen. He had me fooled.
He had us all fooled. I love College Dropout. I played that to the... I had to get a whole nother CD. Like, I played it that hard. So...
So his first album came out in 2004. That was the College Dropout. Late Registration 2005. So you're right. Around that time. And you know what? And we can even go back, because I think you and I are, we saw the golden era of hip hop. You saw it up close and personal, being there in growing up and born and raised in Brooklyn. What part of Brooklyn? Bed-Stuy?
Brownsville.
Excuse me, Brownsville. Brownsville. Never ran, never will.
Never ran, never will. I just had this this conversation with a friend who posted this thing about Ocean Hill never being a real place, right? Brownsville, it's never been Ocean Hill, it's Brownsville. And I was like, I don't think y'all, and this is all tying into hip hop. I was like, I don't think y'all ever really pay attention to hip hop lyrics. Because Biggie told y'all, remember them niggas up the hill up in Brownsville? But the hill is what you called Ocean Hill. I was like, y'all from Brooklyn, y'all don't even know your own Brooklyn history. Get it together. So yes, but we grew up in Brownsville, not up the hill.
Okay. So even seeing that and coming up in this hip hop era, so I think like we saw the golden era happen. We saw the 80s, we saw the explosion, we saw, you know, there's been shifts over the years in hip hop. And I think generally speaking, the shifts happen in, you know, increments of anywhere from 2 to 5 years. And then we saw, you know, gangster rap really take over in the early 90s. We saw, you know, New York explode with, you know, Nas, Wu-Tang, and then subsequently Jay-Z, artists like that in the mid-90s. But right after that time frame, and you could kind of put it around the time that Big passed in 97, that you started to see more money flowing into hip-hop. And I mean, obviously, people profited off of Biggie's death, Puffy, but... but that's beside
Brooklyn House.
But what I'm saying is, like, even in saying that, we saw more money going into hip hop. So, do you think that influx of money coming in into the late 90s, heading into that period in which you talked about, was maybe the start of the ending for the consciousness as far as like being pushed into the music that we were listening to?
Absolutely. Because, all right. Let's take the times before Biggie died, right?
Okay.
So before Biggie died, you could hear Biggie, but you could also hear Arrested Development. They played on the same radio station at the same time, back to back, right? So you had this balance. But the difference is, you knew that Biggie's music was the song you went to jam to, and Mr. Wenzel's supposed to get you to think. Which is how this conversation came about. Mr. Wenzel played on my Alexa, and I was like, oh my God, I haven't heard this in so long.
Right.
But I was moved to not move in the time that it came on, and to think about like my life, my space, where I'm headed, la la la, right? We had balance. When we get further in, right, to the golden era of hip hop, you could hear Jay-Z, Big Pimpin'. You could hear Outkast, Liberation. Then it completely changes. Sure, Outkast made other albums and there was a positive message, but they weren't getting the same play that the Snoop Dogs was getting. Because now it was all about money and bitches. Wait, can you say bitches on YouTube? Money and bitches.
Yeah, my podcast.
I don't know.
What you want to say?
You know, and then you have this generation who, the generation that grows up, I guess they're millennials, right? They grow up on a money chase. They grow up on understanding that drugs fueled a lot of the community. They didn't hear Arrested Development because that wasn't being played anymore. They didn't hear Liberation because they were more intent on radio, became more intent on playing the latest diss track, which was essentially like, diss tracks are great, fine, whatever. But the outcome of a lot of that is a diminishing of a culture. And I enjoy a good, you know, I love a good beef.
Right, right.
But I also know that there are consequences from a good beef. And I think that's what we're seeing now. Also, we're talking about George Bush's kids, right? They got left behind, and their music shows that they've been left behind, right? They aren't as aren't as articulate. They don't have vast vocabulary in the same way. And of course, obviously, and I don't want to say all, there are exceptions to the rule. But the majority of it is very low-hanging fruit. I can make a quick dollar. And that's where I think hip hop becomes kind of problematic, because there's no call to action any further. The call to action is who can record something quickly, fast, and make money.
Listen, you preaching now, because it's really that's what it's been. I think back to a song, and it starts off 1989, a number, another summer, sound of the funky drummer, which is obviously the lyrics to Public Enemies Fight the Power. And that was 1989. I mean, if you look at the country, this country, this world, but specifically this country as a whole, and where we fit in it or where we don't fit in it as a people, why can't we get, or do you think there would be some pushback if the biggest, I don't even want to use any particular artist, but let's just say one of the biggest artists says, "Hey, I want to write fight," or they write the next Fight to Power. What do you think happens from the label and the public as consumers, like rap fans, just regular rap fans? How do you think they accept it or don't?
Well, I think that we have that without knowing that we have it. That's the other thing. The
Okay.
messages are coded in a different way, right? Fight the Power was very specific. Public Enemy was like, black people, stop being ridiculous. Free yourselves. Arrested Development, dressed in a certain way. We are black. We are Afrocentric, right? Lauryn Hill gave you drum beats, took you home. Then music with Bob Marley, like the Bob Mar you know, with the Marley family, that took you home. There was another one I wanted to say something about. We could even go as far back as The Message. The Message told you, I got a message. Are you listening?
I think that's the most important hip hop song ever.
I agree. Right after I believe Fight the Power is next, right? But we also had co collective songs, right? We had all kinds of things. We even had the Wu-Tang Clan giving you messages. I'm gonna just go ahead and mention them, right? Because there's a message in Can It Be That It Was All So Simple, right? It's not just I sold drugs. It was I sold drugs because times were hard. Reaganomics was a factor, blah, blah, blah. You had to dig. The lyrics were plain and clear. Nas was very plain and clear, right? And his message. And even as sometimes, so is Jay-Z, very plain and clear about his message. The message now, because of the fear of attack, I feel like, is a lot more coded. And if you don't have the basis of what we just talked about, how can you pick up on the message? So I'll use everybody's favorite rapper of right now, Kendrick Lamar.
Okay.
If you really break down Kendrick Lamar from the Grammy performance to the Super Bowl, he has given young black kids a roadmap. I wrote about it on Facebook. I can't pull it up now. I'll just send it to you later. But I wrote this really long post because I was like, are you guys paying attention? He literally starts that Grammy performance in a prison. He's in a prison. That prison transforms. And he starts off talking about, I'm black, I'm African American. Your goal is to harm me. And he did that in a basically white audience,
Yeah,
right?
I remember that performance.
Right? It was a powerful performance. And like, it came up in my Facebook memories, and where I was like, somebody send me the GIF of the white people reaction, because I know they bugging out. Right? But he was talking to, I mean, he was talking to everybody, but specifically to young people. You African American, people are gonna see you as less. You gotta see yourself as more. And I'm here to tell you, you're more, right? So you got that at the Grammys. Then you got the song with Beyonce, right? Yeah. Freedom, I can't move. Mm-hmm. Freedom, cut me loose. Y'all singing about getting formation, but your message was in the Freedom song. Yeah. Everything is so much more coded. But you have to have a foundation in Pan-Africanism. You have to have a foundation in Black history to read between the lines of these messages. Now, we could go fast forward. Everybody is talking about Not Like Us, but they're not talking about the right parts of Not Like Us, right?
Right.
They talking about calling Drake a pedophile. But what about him saying it's 40 acres and a mule? This is bigger than a movement, right? 40 acres and a mule is particularly important for Black people. Even more so for African Americans, if you are a descendant of people who were enslaved in this country. Because that's the original, there's an original sin, and then there's original betrayal. And the 40 acres and the mule is the original betrayal. Everything from that point on has been a fight.
Facts.
So are we listening? No, we're not listening. But you could keep digging and keep digging and keep digging. And it's not just the songs he performed at these two events. Mm-hmm. If you go listen to that song, I. Mm-hmm. He literally starts off talking about why he, people are listening as him talking about himself. Really, he's talking about us as a people. Mm-hmm. And if you listen to the live version of I, you hear it later on where he says why he don't say F and words and things like that. There's a message there. There's this is my favorite Kendrick Lamar song of all time. And it took me a long time to be like put a thing on it. Right.
What is it? All right.
No, I love All Right, like everybody, but okay, it's Sing okay. About Me, Dying of Thirst.
Yes, yes.
If you go and listen to Sing About Me, just that part, telling Black stories, and the ending of what that Black story looks like, mm-hmm. and why are you dying of thirst? Because you've not been fed all these years of hip-hop, right? You haven't been fed. You haven't been given water. You're thirsty. And thirst is what leads to, I got to chase money as opposed to, let me make sure what I'm putting out there is positive. Right? But it again, I'm not going to harp on like it's just the men or it's just the women. It's not that. It's the industry as a whole. Like even when the current day, like artists put out something that might be vaguely popular, like not popular, vaguely positive, mm-hmm. it gets pushed aside.
Right.
It gets pushed. Nobody don't want to hear about your mental health. Get that out of here.
Like it's not.
Are you
important.
Shaking it for the gram?
Right.
How short are your shorts? How hard are you twerking? How much chains are on your neck? Right. It's a disturbing way to think that how our culture doesn't belong to us anymore. Right. That's why when people be like, I'm doing it for the culture, I'll be the first one to go, well, which culture is it? Because right. that don't sound right to me.
So in saying that, and I think you make some great points in saying that, where should it be where should us, particularly people like you and I who are seasoned in hip hop, because the difference between us and a lot of people that purchase hip hop of this day and age is that we know of a world that existed without hip hop. Mm-hmm. They don't, you know, our kids don't, they didn't know what it was like to wake up and not know if hip hop was coming back or it wasn't even hip hop back then. It was rap. And I tell the story all the time. Like I literally would go to school because I love rap so much. I literally would go to school and didn't know what, by the time I came home from school, the rap would be gone. Because it was told to us that it was going to be a fad. It wasn't going to be around. It was going to be like breakdancing and disco. It was going to be here today, gone tomorrow. You couldn't make a career out of it. You definitely couldn't make any money out of it because we'd never seen anybody make any money out of it. So mm-hmm. even when you fast forward, like you said, you get to a point where, you know, we're being fed or not being fed. What is the responsibility for us as fans as far as what we command? Because I always say, like, you mentioned somebody like a Mos Def. Mos Def never got played on the radio. I mean, his hits did, but, you know, he is amongst many of artists that don't get played. But, you know, somebody like Trinidad, and I don't mean to dump on Trinidad James, but Trinidad James, Fetty Wap, at one point in time, they dominated the radio waves. Sexy Red, I would assume right now, is dominating the radio waves. I don't listen to the radio, but you get my point. So where is, what responsibility does we as hip hop fans come, what responsibility do we bear as far as making sure that those type of political messages, not just political, but, you know, our messages that need to be heard get across to the regular fan?
So I think it starts with the same way all things start, right? Somebody puts out a song that's positive. There's this guy on Instagram. I really like him. I can't remember his name right now, and I didn't write it down because I just found him like a couple of weeks ago. His message is very positive. So you stream his stuff. We have way more control than we ever had before, right? We don't have to go to Virgin Records and stand online and all that kind of stuff anymore.
Oh, man,
we have the palm. Listen, I used to love a good trip to the record store to buy forget about just buying a CD, but like a record.
Yes. Right?
So I think that's a thing. We have the ability to push artists that we think are more positive up in these streaming wars, right? I think that when new age art, like the newer artists who are more popular, are doing things with other artists, and we think those artists are, like, I don't like Sexy Red, but I like Glorilla. So if Glorilla did something with somebody that I think is a little bit more positive, a Most Def of Today, that would be a song I use on my Instagram stories. I stream it. It's a different thing. But I think the biggest responsibility is those of us who remember a world without hip hop. Remember a world where hip hop could have disappeared. Remember watching LL Cool J on television in a Gap commercial with a FUBU hat on. Is that we pass those stories to our kids. Corey will tell y'all, if he was coming here right now, he'll tell you, my mom and my dad was in the streets. I wasn't in nobody's streets. Not in the streets way, right?
Right.
I went to the club. I went to the party. I knew tons of rappers. I knew tons of this. I knew everybody because New York was different then.
It was.
But he asks me questions and I tell him stories. He looks at my yearbook and he can see, right? Oh, you went to high school with the kid from X-Clan. Why does Corey know who X-Clan is? Because his mama told him who that was. And if generationally we break it, it breaks for everybody. CJ has a whole playlist. He was like, I'm sitting down putting together a playlist of all female artists. I was like, oh, let's do it together. But I didn't have to do anything because I've exposed him so much that Whitney Houston can't get missed, right? Queen Latifah, UNITY, is at the top of his list. He knows who MC Light is. He understands the significance behind that stuff. So I think that's really it. It's like, you know how people always go, talk to your elders and tell their stories. Well, guess what? We may be only in our 50s, but we are those elders now. So tell your story. Podcasts like this, podcasts like my friend Malik, the Rap Ruler, all those things are important. Get rap artists from the older rap artists, get them on these shows and let them talk. I'm not talking about the LL Cool J's because you can see LL Cool J anywhere.
Right.
But like, why are people not talking to Stetson Sonic? Stetson Sonic changed the game. Not only were they a band of musicians, but they incorporated jazz music. They had beef with on-air people. They had beef with Prince. Like, you had beef with Prince?
Right.
This is worthy of an interview, right? Somewhere along the lines, expose your kids to what Video Music Box was. Because there was a reason that Video Music Box captivated us, right? Because for how long had we not seen ourselves on television in this way? Right, you knew who Diana Ross was, but there was no particular television show that you could tune in to see Diana Ross. But Video Music Box, The Box, all those other hip hop shows, Rap City.
Rap City. Yo MTV Raps.
Yo MTV Raps.
Turn on TV and see people that look like you and talk like you every single day.
Right. Dress like you. You had on a hoodie and a pair of Jabos. They had on a hoodie and a pair of Jabos. Y'all had on the same outfit.
Same outfit.
You know, like, I'll never forget my sister's favorite story to tell about why she loved, how she grew to love hip hop. There's two, my story and hers. So my story is, we have an older sister. My older mm-hmm. sister was away in college in the 80s and would come home and we would steal her tapes. Like, I remember stealing her Public Enemy tape over and over and over again.
Wow.
Public Enemy is the foundation for everything I am and who I am as a hip hop artist, as a hip hop fan and a hip hop lover, mm-hmm. right? My younger sister, we had a neighbor. So y'all know Brooklyn houses are close to each other. So this is my house and our friend lived here. His name was Derek. And Derek used to put, like, after school, and he was significantly older than us. Like, I want to say, like, maybe if I was 12, Derek was 15.
Okay.
He might have been, like, 2 or 3 years older than us. But our house, our windows, well, it was my grandmother's bedroom window, and his bedroom window used to face each other.
Okay.
So he used to take his boombox and put it in the window. And he used to play songs. And the first time she heard Eric B. and Rakim was through Derek playing that for her. Wow. How did I learn the words to Mahogany and know it like I wrote it? Because mm-hmm. Derek used to play it in the window for us, right? Derek wasn't significantly older than us. I mean, he was significantly older than us in teen years, but not mm-hmm. in real life.
Right.
But he shared his knowledge, and that made me share my knowledge, and then so forth and so on. And I think that's why the generations of us that lived through that golden era of hip hop, why we are so strong-minded about it, right? Because we watched it evolve. I'm the same age as hip hop.
Yep.
It's been here since I've been here.
Yep. I'm 9 months right? older. That's it.
9 months older.
That's it.
But you wasn't like 7 years older.
No. Nine months older, and ironically, I was born 10 miles from where it was, where it was born, where it was, you know, birth, I should say.
Right, and so it's very personal to us. Hip hop's not personal anymore, right? I still go hard for MC Light every day, all the time. I dare you to say something bad about MC Light. I'll fight you, right? Because for me, MC Light was the epitome of what it was to be a girl from Brooklyn. She had that fly haircut. She had bamboo earrings. She was so mm-hmm. aggressive. And she is your favorite rapper's favorite rapper.
Thanks.
And not your favorite female rapper. She's your favorite rapper's favorite rapper. Right. I grew up in a neighborhood where it...
If you want a podcast where culture, conversation, and life collide, where you get insightful commentary, engaging discussions, and a fresh perspective on everything, then you need to listen to the 12 Kyle podcast, hosted by the one and only, yours truly, 12 Kyle, a voice that you know and trust. This podcast will bring you thought-provoking moments, compelling stories, and a whole lot of fun. Whether you're a first-time listener or just tuning in, each episode promises to be something new and exciting. So sit back, relax, join 12 Kyle, myself, and my guests as we break down the world around us and give you stories that you've never heard before, from nostalgic throwbacks to everything in between. The 12 Kyle podcast is a front row seat to this conversation. Subscribe now and never miss an episode of the 12 Kyle podcast, where the vibe is always real and the discussion is always worth your time. Are you feeling nostalgic for the golden eras of rap and soul music? If so, tune in to the Rap Soul Podcast. We are your weekly journey through the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, spotlighting the music and the hidden gems that shaped the soundtrack of our lives. From the powerful beats to the soulful melodies, we bring you the best of the past with fresh insights and stories. Rediscover the music that defined a generation. Subscribe to the Rap Soul Podcast and enjoy the vibes.
Wasn't uncommon to see rappers. My friend dated Big Daddy Kane's dancer. That's crazy, right? My cousin dated one of the Fat Boys.
Okay.
Right? This is foundationally who I am. And so because it's foundationally who I am, it's foundationally who my kids are. My kids don't walk out into this world and not know the history of the music that they want to listen to. Exactly. Right? I think it was a De La Soul song.
Mm-hmm.
I Know I Love You Better. My favorite De La Soul song of all time.
Okay.
You want to see me at the fool, play that song. Right? And my oldest figured out the sample. Mm, yeah. And was so excited. Did you know?
Kids love samples. That was something that was new to me. Our middle son Cameron, the same way. He somehow stumbled upon like websites like Who Sampled It, and he would say, "Hey, where did you get this? You know, in this song right here, they're playing this." And then he found, you know, I introduced my kids to the hip hop that I grew up on. And, you know, just let it kind of go from there. And I tell my kids all the time, like, y'all don't have no lame parents. Like, your parents are very much so hip-hop heads. And that's just the music that we know. So subsequently, it was going to be something that we passed on to them. So they, while they listen to, you know, the contemporaries, I guess, from the music of the kids that, you know, their fellow friends listen to, they've also been exposed to so much of the music. And I think, like, and I've talked about this before, like one of the most proudest father moments I had as a father was a couple of years ago. Me and our oldest son, Dion, who's 25 now, I think he was probably, 22 at the time, because it was almost 3 years ago. We went to the Wu-Tang Nas concert. Mm-hmm. And Nas is performing The World Is Yours. And we're like, we both of us are standing together and we're going back and forth, like trading lines, like we're both Nas. And it was just, it was a real moment that almost made me shed a tear, because I remember the day where I went to get my Nas CD, because I had this huge CD changer, or a place where I kept my CDs. And it was this big rack. And I remember going to get Illmatic one day and the CD was gone. And I remember going to get Enter the 36 Chambers, and it was gone. And I happened to go into his room later that night, and I saw both CDs in his, you know, just kind of sitting there. And instead of, you know, being like a parent, like, why did you take my music? I let him keep it. And because it was something that he was interested in, and it brought me back to that moment, that particular moment, us being at the concert, you know, trading lines on a Nas song. Like, he literally grew up listening to the music that I grew up listening to.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate that, because I think you should be able to share that music. And it's something I want to go back to that you mentioned a little earlier. You mentioned Glorilla. At the time of this recording, Glorilla just performed at Coachella. And she's rapping this song and she brings out Queen Latifah.
That was Meg.
I'm sorry, Meg. My bad, Meg.
Who I do also love.
You know what? So my question is, with Meg, Glorilla, and even Sexy Red, some of the messages, some of the imagery can be disturbing.
It's suggestive.
Very much so. And it's not to say, and I got an episode coming up that I'm going to tell you. I titled it, We Used to Listen to Ratchet Music Too. Because we did. Like,
we
personally.
Did?
I listened to Luke. And Luke was now I mentioned before, like, going back and listening to Luke now at 52, it don't really hit the same. And maybe I was into Luke so much for the imagery. Plus, also, I knew it was something I wasn't supposed to be listening to. So, you know, we had boundaries on music that we had to, and I always tell people about how I had to sneak to listen to NWA. And one of the reasons that I fell in love with NWA is because my mom told me that I couldn't listen to it. And so it was that form of rebellion. So my question is, when you look at, and not to single the women out, but when you look at women who have suggestive music, what do you tell your teenage son about that, as far as what he's seeing, between the difference between what's real? Because we know what he's rapping about. I mean, and
right,
it ain't that far from what Kim and Foxy was rapping about in 95, 96. But what do you tell your teenage son, or maybe what should I tell my now teenage daughter?
So I'll start with my teenage sons. Mm-hmm. My teenage sons don't listen to the women that much.
Really?
Those particular women. They listen to Glorilla. They love them some Glow.
Okay.
But I think that's my, that's me, right? Because I played that album into the ground.
Okay.
So they're not huge on a lot of the current day female artists. Mm-hmm. And I think it has a lot less to do with the message than just, it's just not their thing, right? But because I know that they have come in contact with it, right? There's no way you haven't come in contact with Sexy Red one way or another, right? They love Tyler, the Creator.
Can't
get away from it. Can't get away from Glow. Can't get away from Meg. I tell them that this is no different than you watching a movie, right? Denzel Washington is not the guy from Training Day when you see him on the street, right? Meg Thee Stallion is a actress. This is who she really is, right? So when she graduated from school, I was very clear, like, see guys, this is who she is, and this is who she portrays to be. I feel like CJ is less to ask me those questions, but I'm sure Corey will be like, but why does she need to act in such a manner? And so I think that's the first message, right? Is that we tell all our kids that this is a job, right? I'm not who I am. Well, I'm who I am all the time. So maybe I'm not a good example, but we'll just use me. Who I am in my office is not always who I am at home, right? In my office, I guess this is true. In my office, I'm the only Black person. I'm the only woman. So I have to be a certain way in order to command respect, right? And obviously growing up in a corporate world and all the things we just talked about foundationally about who I am, that looks different, right? These younger girls, in their reclaiming their sexuality, also think that a part of that is to put it on display, and that's okay for them. I'm an old woman in comparison. I never had to do that, even with Little Kim, right? I never had to do that, but I also know Kim in real life, so I knew that was a portrayal that was painted. The other thing I tell my kids about this is many of these images are crafted by men. So what do you do with that? Right? If I say the only way a man can sell, right, and I'm the dominant culture, I say the only way a man can sell is by doing X, Y, and Z, then let's not even say X, Y, and Z. Let's be specific. We can use the 2000s, right? Button down shirts, jeans that fit, no sagging. You have to wear shoes. Don't come in here with no Jordans. Right? If I start creating this box, and that's the only box to be successful, the first thing you have to do sometimes is fit into that box. Yeah. Missy Elliott is one of the few people who was like, I'm not doing that. Mm-hmm. But Missy Elliott also launched her own record label, had producers behind her who were her friends. Right? That Virginia group is not the norm.
No, not at all. Especially hip-hop.
Right? Right. They created the image they wanted. And they were like, you could get on or you could get off. I feel like there's certain aspects of Atlanta, that's the same way. Outkast and Goody Mob. They were like, we who we are and that's it. We're not doing all that other stuff.
Right?
T.I. and them change that. They fall into the box. Mm-hmm. Right. And so you have to, I think that's the conversation. And I think, again, that's the responsibility of those of us who have been in hip hop, who've watched what others would call a downward spiral because of money. You know, I say it all the time, everywhere. We all owe C. Dolores Tucker an apology. She wasn't wrong. Her delivery may not have been right, but she wasn't wrong. right? She wasn't completely wrong. There were things that she was trying to warn us about that we didn't pay attention to. Mm-hmm. Specifically, the use of the N-word.
I think what happened was we were just so put off by the idea of being censored. You know, it's like we created this culture, we created this genre, we created these songs. Who are you to look down on us and tell us what we can and can't say? And words we're using ain't no different. We didn't make these words up. You know what I'm saying? So it was, so I get it, especially now that I'm older. But no, when Pac was going at her and some of the other rappers were going, I was like, yeah, get her. You know, because I was just, it was.
Because we were young.
Yeah, we were young and rebellious. Speaking of rebellious, one song comes to mind, Self-Destruction, Stop the Violence Movement, was huge in the 80s. And we subsequently had also We're All in the Same Gang out west. Do you think that type of song with several artists could be created today?
Nope.
You're shaking your head.
No, I don't think so. I would welcome them to prove me wrong.
Okay.
But they don't have a sense of community anymore, which is why I think I'm going to go back to Kendrick. Y'all gonna get sick of me talking about Kendrick while we on, right? But I do feel
this is dope. Yeah, I remember seeing you post this.
I feel like people aren't mad at Kendrick for dissing Drake. They are mad at Kendrick for telling Los Angeles, Black people in general, African Americans specifically, close the gate. Mm-hmm. Go back to community.
Yeah.
If you go back to community, nothing can go wrong, right? If you close the gate to imposters, nothing can go wrong. Hip hop in the time of self-destruction and We All in the Same Gang and Don't Curse was because everybody was a community, right? Everybody got their beats from Marley Marl. That's how it worked.
Right.
It was a community of people who said, hey, we wanna do a song and nobody curse on it. Right. You got Coogee Rap on that song. Coogee Rap curse when he wake up. He go to sleep cursing. Right. He didn't say a single curse word on that song.
Yep.
But you know why? Because there was a respect and a community that stopped existing as soon as we went Bad Boy, Rockefeller. That era demolishes all of that. Biggie and Tupac's death do more than just take away great rappers from us. They took away people. Biggie was moving back towards this whole like community vibe, right? We could all get along. Let's party in the street. That's what I'm here for, right? Tupac was our Huey P. Newton. He was our Malcolm. Right? Sure. And his trajectory was just that.
Yeah.
Right? He was rowdy and ragged in the beginning. Right? You know, he got around.
Right, right. But he had messages.
His messages. One of the songs I wrote down, Holla If You Hear Me. I wish more people listened to what he says in that song. You don't want to listen to that song? Go listen to him and Scarface on Smile. There's a line in Smile where he says, I don't understand. I'm not quoting it, but it's basically, why are you sad? You woke up today and you are black. You don't have no reason to be sad. And then he laughs, like giggles. Because, like, what? You are born of some of the greatest. You stand on shoulders of mountain men and women. Why are you sad? Because that's what everything is told to us, right? You gotta be sad and black. That's why the memes where it's like, I woke up being black today and it's all excited. Every day I wake up excited because I'm black.
Right. Yeah, it wouldn't to be anything else.
Right. But outside of Kendrick Lamar, who's telling people that? I know people like to say J. Cole, but I don't think J. Cole's message is the same. I think he had a moment. But that didn't sell.
I think that there are artists out there. I just think, like, we came from an era where, and I don't want people to think like it was all, you know, preaching and sermons and stuff in the 80s and the early 90s.
It wasn't.
I mean, like, the word that Krishna used earlier, I want to go back to, balance. So, yeah, you could have a Tupac, you know, screaming, hit him up. And then you might have Tupac saying, keep your head up. Or you could have, you know, just somebody talking about selling drugs, hustling, shooting people or whatever like that. And then you had and where the balance came in is that you got a little bit of everything, particularly when it came to TV and radio. That's where the frustration came in as we moved into the 2000s, because like it just started, like you said, it just started going one way and it just kept going that way. And, you know, there is no sound of the police like the KRS-One song. You know, one of the dopest songs I thought that nobody ever really caught on to was a song for Asada Shakur. Mm-hmm. It's on the Commons album, Like Water for Chocolate. And me and Eclectic, shout out to the homie Eclectic, we talk about this all the time. Like, and he did an episode called Hip Hop Taught Us. Hip Hop would teach us things. And one of the things I always mention about that song, A Song for Asada, I had no idea who Asada Shakur was until I heard that song. I'd never heard her name before. I had gone to black elementary schools, black middle school, black high school, and a black college. And it wasn't until I heard that song. And it's so many people, because our history's told from a perspective of, we get Black History Month and you get Malcolm. Let me go back, because I didn't even get Malcolm. You know, it wasn't until my dad gave me my senior year in high school, gave me the autobiography of Malcolm X and told me to read it. And I read it and fell in love with the book and the man. And, you know, but it goes back to what you said, like, we have to push along the history, whether it be hip hop history, our history, because if you look around, clearly there are people intentionally trying to erase our history from the record books. And the thing is, you can't do it, but they're going to try their best to do it. And so that leads me to another question. I guess we can end with this. Given the political discord that we have in this country, can it be a superstar or superstars to speak out about this current administration and what they're doing in a song?
I don't know that I would trust many of them to do that, right? So to your point about not knowing who Asada was in that moment, you know, until that song came out, and not learning Malcolm X in school. Nobody learns Malcolm X in school. It doesn't matter where you are regionally. You don't learn Malcolm X in school because Malcolm X was seen as a threat. Right. Exactly. You won't know Asada unless you grow up in a specific kind of community. Like, I grew up in a community like that. Right. Mm-hmm. Because they were agent changers that raised me. And there are no more of those communities. Right. I think that we are in a space of a shift where that is coming back. You hear more black people talking about closing the gate. Right. You hear more people going, we need to gatekeep more. But you can't teach. The reason I don't trust a lot of, I would say, mainstream hip hop artists to do that, so that it makes a splash outside of Kendrick Lamar. That's my last time mentioning him. The reason I don't trust a lot of mainstream artists to do that is because they don't even make the connection that you just made, right? We can't just teach our history or hip hop history. It's not an or, it's an and.
And, right?
Like, the shirt you're wearing, that is a moment of our actual black history that the Roots put on a shirt. Things fall apart. The Roots have been warning us for years of what's coming.
Years.
And people are like, we don't want to hear that jazz band, right? Right. That's what you get from
all that preaching.
All that preaching and teaching. I don't want to hear that. When Nas is preaching, nobody don't want to hear that. They want to hear Uchi Wally. Right? When Public Enemy redid What was the one they redid? Not it was Do the Right Thing. It was the movie from Do the Right Thing. You know what I'm talking about. Fight the Power. When they redid Fight the Power during the pandemic, that should have went triple platinum. It did not.
Yes. Yes.
Nope. Who's listening to Rhapsody? Rhapsody is right there in your face.
I love Rhapsody.
If you don't know who Rhapsody is, you don't know about the Fight the Power remix. You can't quote Vic Mensa, Shades of Blue. You don't know Joey Badass's Land of the Free. These are artists who are amazing artists, but they aren't the leading mainstream artists. But they are the ones that are connecting the dots that hip-hop history is our history. It is Black history. It is American history. And it doesn't start with a song and a beat. It starts long before that. It starts long before a slave ship. So what do you, what if we don't fix that? If we don't fix that, what do we do next? One of the things that is very dear to my heart is over the, since November, I started a Saturday school. And traditionally, Saturday schools are for children, right? The Black Panthers started Saturday schools for kids. My Saturday school started with the adults, because who are the story keepers? Kids don't pass messages.
No.
I pass the message down, and that passes down through generations. That's the way I learned. I learned from my grandmother, who told my mother, who told me, who told, I tell CJ, who tells Corey, who will tell his kids, and vice, and down and down and down, right? So when I decided that this was something I wanted to do, because I saw what was coming, right? I was like, well, I'll start with the parents. I'll start with the adults, and we'll make it digestible. So we go to museums, but the art is designed around who we are as people. And then we sit down and we break bread and we discuss.
Okay.
Right? The next one is next month. And we're going to the African burial grounds. People don't even know African burial grounds are in New York. There are multiple ones. There are two. One in Harlem and one downtown Manhattan. But people don't know that they're there. Because people don't believe there was slavery here. But like, New York is a port city. But specifically here, New York is a port city. Where y'all think the boats came into? Atlanta?
Right.
Atlanta is not a port city.
We're landlocked. Right?
The boats came in to the north, and then slaves traveled south on foot. So I want people to know those things. And I also want us to know those things void of whiteness. Right now, white people all over TikTok have discovered the African burial grounds. And it's upsetting to me, right? Because you didn't discover it. It's been sitting there since the 90s. Right, but specifically, if you when you come back, I'll take you there. There is there is an arch that is built. So briefly, the story of the African burial grounds is Lower Manhattan was being dug up to create new building spaces, and when they did that, they started finding all these bodies, all these bones, not in caskets, but just people, like fully intact. Buried all across this area right near the bridge. And the study, I believe that some of the bones went to Howard, and they were like, wait a minute, these are Black people. And so they started digging and digging, more and more people, more and more bodies, kids, adults, men, blah blah blah, men, women, everybody just buried here. And the Black activists in New York, Al Sharpton, all of the ones you know, were like, y'all can't build here. This is a graveyard. And so there was this whole big fight, whatever, whatever. And so eventually it became that we are going to make this a sacred ground, right? So there's like a museum attached to it, but all of the bodies were taken down to the water. And a ceremony was performed, and they were put into coffins, and they were brought back up from the water. people were carrying the coffins, like a second line. Mm-hmm. And they were bought back. But when they bought them back, they walked them through this archway that was built. It's called the Door of Return. And they walked them through the archway, and you walk in basically a circle. You walk through that. It's like a circle. And as you walk through the circle, there are different African symbols, Sankofa, blah, 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 blah. All the symbols that would be blessings that if we were in Africa for your funeral service, deities and all that other kind of stuff. And then they all placed in the ground under a cosmograph. And the way it's numbered, you can tell if it's a child, if it's whatever, women, blah, 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 blah. But it's called the Door of Return, and it is for Black people. And guess who's walking through that door? Because they discovered it.
Right, right.
Right? But if you don't know the history, well, I mean, you know, it's only a matter of time before they do, like they do with everything. You know, Wall Street itself, where the financial museum stands, if you ever come to the city and you go to the financial museum, there's a statue of Alexander Hamilton. Where that statue stands was a slave, where they sold slaves at. These are things we don't talk about. And because we don't connect those history dots, and why is it called Wall Street, and why are these divots in the ground, and blah, blah, blah. We don't connect all the dots. We don't connect the dots around Seneca Village. We don't connect the dots around Lake Lanier. We don't connect. We don't connect. We don't connect. But all those things, connecting all those dots, is what fueled the hip hop that we know. Mm-hmm. And if we keep starting that, if we keep having these conversations and not joking or allowing ourselves to become the joke, then guess what? There is the opportunity for hip hop to shift, because you can't just say we're the greatest of all time. You have to prove it.
Mm. Preach.
Preach. And that's it.
And that is truly a drop the mic moment. Wow, this has been dope. We definitely have to do this again. And as you guys listening and watching on YouTube, thank you for watching. You know, you don't have to wait till February to get knowledge and knowledge of self and everything that's going around. Because trust me, February is only 28 days.
So it's only 28 days. One year is 29 every four.
Right. And I mean, at some point, they may even shorten that. They may make it 17 at some point. But yeah, we got to definitely do this again. Love having you on talking hip hop. And we were everywhere, but we have it centralized here where, you know, hopefully you all got something from this conversation. Actually, quite a few things. And do your research. Google is free. And knowing your history is something that we all should have. Before we get you out of here, is anything you want to plug? Anything you got going on you want to talk about?
Nah, I ain't doing nothing. I'm just over here talking. I ain't doing nothing. I will say this. It's not about me either. I am going to recommend, y'all know I love a good book. Kyle, though, I'll be having a book for everything. What? You want to learn about? Let me tell you the book. You need a movie? I got a movie. But I just recently read a book called Sky Full of Elephants. Without giving away the book, I would challenge your listeners to read the book and understand what community looks like when it's just us. When it's just Black people. I won't tell you why it's just Black people, because my friend told me I was spoiling the plot, even though that's not the plot. But yeah. Sky Full of Elephants. If you just right now read the description, you'll know why it's just us.
Wow. And you know what? It's on audiobook.
Yeah. Oh, it's probably listen.
I'm big on audiobooks, Krishna, because I just, for some reason, I have a hard time sitting there turning the pages. So, like, audiobooks have been my thing for the last, I don't know, probably 2 years now. So,
also, you be in the car. I could see that.
Yeah, and, yeah, I'm in
the
car.
In the car, you turn it on. Well, I'll tell you this.
Well,
this is a book you can listen to, yes. But if you read it, you would not put it down. Like, I stayed up three nights in a row till 2 o'clock in the morning so I could finish. I couldn't stop reading. I was at work reading. I go to bed at 8 o'clock. I'll be like, I'm way past my bedtime. I'll be like, good night, everybody. Sometimes I go to bed and the kids still be up. I'll be like, good night. So, right. Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to add that to my audiobook.
Yes,
my
do
library.
It.
So that will be the next. That will be the next thing that I take that I listen to.
But yeah, I ain't doing nothing special.
Well, I mean, the whole thing with the Saturday school, that sounds dope. Because you don't have to do that. And that's a part of giving back. That's a part of, those are the stories that we need to hear and know that stuff existed. Because again, I'm sure there were probably somebody listening was like, oh, I didn't know we had burials for our people in New York City. Because if you said that it happened in Charleston, yeah, I'm thinking, because that's a port, like you said, it's a port city. I know exactly where. And I've been to where in Charleston, South Carolina, where they had there's a place in like downtown historic Charleston where you can go by and you can actually see the where slaves were auctioned. And it's right there.
I went there when I was down there.
Okay. So you already know. So, I mean, like, and there's a lot of plethora of places like that in the South. But to hear about something, you know, being like that in New York City, and I'm sure if we do our history, we'll find out that it's not just relegated to those places. It's all over, but we have to ask questions and we have to speak to those who came before us, because as this older generation leaves, you know, they're taking the receipts and the recipes with them, and we got to be able to pass that stuff down. But yes, Krishna, as always, thank you for coming through. We got to do this again. Yeah. I appreciate you staying up past your bedtime.
No, my phone's about to go on do not disturb, so you know.
I know, right?
Let's wrap it up. You guys, it's gonna go proof, proof.
You guys have been, I know, right? You guys have been.
An old lady, I don't have.
I want to thank you all for tuning in. We do each and every week. You know, we drop episodes every Thursday and every Sunday at midnight. Be sure to check out us on all streaming platforms. You can find the podcast there. We're on social media at 12 Kyle, at 12 Kyle Podcast. We have a new baby. It's called the Rap Soul Podcast. We drop new episodes there every Monday. Rap Soul Podcast deals with music and artists from the 80s, the 90s, and the 2000s. Trust me, it's the best music podcast that you've never heard. So check it out. Again, that's going to do it for us. So for my girl Krishna, I'm your boy 12 Kyle. We'll catch you guys next time. 5,000.
Thank you for listening. This concludes the episode. Be sure to subscribe to the Rap Soul Podcast. You can find the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Follow the podcast on social media. And feel free to continue this discussion on our Reddit page. More importantly, share this podcast with a friend or family member who loves music as much as you do. Until next time, 5,000.